Hello, my Walking with Jesus friends all around the world. When I say that, friends all around the world, I wonder what comes into your mind. Do you think of places like Tokyo, or Mexico City, or Berlin, or Beirut, or Jerusalem, or Hong Kong, or Paris, or Dubai, or Nairobi? Or does it pass you by and you primarily think of your town and your country? Depending on what news source you listen to, or where your network of friends are, or what sport or teams you follow, isn't it true that our circle of awareness and interest can be very small, as compared to our big world of 7.5 billion people? Have you also noticed we tend to focus on the present, the very recent past, and the future as we live our lives, overlooking so much we have to learn from the distant past? Over the past several months, I've been trying to stretch our awareness, leading us to actually step back in time and engage with some of the most fascinating people, places, and times in the story of God interfacing with our world, as found in the Bible. Today, join me again, this time in the great palatial city of Susa in the Persian kingdom. The most powerful man in the world, in 445 BC, has his grand palace in this city, Susa. Nearly 2,500 years later, it is, in our day, known as the city of Shush, Iran, with about 70,000 people. Time has a way of changing things, doesn't it? Two famous people in the Bible have their stories in Susa. One is Queen Esther, and we've already read her remarkable story and how God saved all Jews across the entire Persian kingdom in response to her faith, her prayers, and her mobilizing of the people to pray for God's miraculous intervention. The annual festival of Purim celebrates today what took place in Susa in 479 BC with Queen Esther, King Xerxes, Mordecai, and Haman. About 35 years later, in 445 BC, in the same palatial city of Susa, a new emperor, Artaxerxes, had been in power about 20 years, and I'm sure he knew the story of Queen Esther and his predecessor, King Xerxes, very well. One of King Artaxerxes' trusted palace employees was a man named Nehemiah. He actually safeguarded the king's life every day by checking to see that his food and beverage was safe from any contamination, either accidental or intentional. I suspect he spent a great deal of time in the palace kitchens, and Nehemiah must have known every chef, every baker, every winemaker personally. They knew their lives depended on the king's health. An upset stomach, an allergic reaction to anything the king ate or drank, could bring imprisonment or their execution. Have you ever had a case of what we call food poisoning? In Susa, in 445 BC, that would not simply have been an inconvenience. Nehemiah's story is found in the Bible, in the book which bears his name, and is a record of his remarkable experiences with God. Have you ever thought about keeping a journal or some record of the remarkable experiences that you have with God? I assure you that if you did, it will be one of the most valuable possessions you will someday pass to your descendants. Wouldn't you love to have a record of your parents' or grandparents' spiritual experiences written in their own hand from decades ago? Nehemiah chapter 1 gives us a glimpse into this man's character and personality, which I find very challenging to me, and I hope you'll find challenging to you also. While living his normal life, evidently Nehemiah's brother, Hanani, and some other men came to Susa, presumably on a business trip, having just returned from a very long voyage. They'd come from Jerusalem, possibly a trip of almost 1,000 miles, depending on the route they took. I love Nehemiah's inquisitive spirit. The record says, "I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem." We have no reason to believe Nehemiah had ever been to Jerusalem, but we know he was Jewish, and we presume he was well versed in the history of the Jews, their city Jerusalem, their exile in both the Babylonian and Persian empires, and the returns of large numbers of Jews from Babylon to rebuild their city Jerusalem and their temple. Do you have an inquisitive spirit? Are you interested to know about what is happening all around the world? Are you fascinated by the stories of the great work of God in the vast cities in China, or South Korea, or India, or in the jungles of Indonesia, or what God has been doing across the great continents of Africa or South America, or what God is doing in the Muslim nations of Central Asia, and now even Europe? What Nehemiah heard broke his heart. They said to me, "Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire." Nehemiah was not hearing a report of a fresh war or a major earthquake. No, Nehemiah knew Jerusalem had been destroyed by King Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC. That's more than 140 years. Six generations had passed by now, and Nehemiah wanted a progress report. Was Jerusalem once again flourishing, rebuilt, vibrant, maybe even returned to the glory years of King Solomon? Well, yes, much rebuilding had taken place, including the temple, and Ezra's spiritual revival of 13 years before had brought great spiritual renewal, but the city was both vulnerable and shamed by the rubble of the city walls and broken gates, which had not been repaired in more than a century. In closing today, look at Nehemiah's response to this sad news. "When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." May I ask, how do you respond when you hear heartbreaking news from faraway places, especially if it's news of Christians being persecuted or churches destroyed or missionaries killed? How do you respond as you watch the moral decline of the society in which you live? Do you see, Nehemiah said he fasted, prayed, and mourned for some days. Actually, it was 4 months from the month of Kislev in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1, to the month of Nisan in Nehemiah 2, verse 1. That's just not some days. That's a prolonged vigil of focused prayer seeking help from God. Do you have a heart like Nehemiah? January 22nd. Just a few days ago was the 48th anniversary of a historical court decision in America, Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion in the United States and has paved the way for abortion in many other countries who follow America's lead. More than 60 million defenseless babies have been slaughtered since that day in America. Whenever you hear the word abortion, do you respond like Nehemiah did when he heard heartbreaking news? This statement was released in honor of the anniversary this year by Nancy Pelosi, the high-profile female leader of the House of Representatives in the U.S. Congress, on January 22nd, just a few days ago. Quote, "For 48 years, Roe v. Wade has been a cornerstone of health and equal rights for all American women. This landmark decision protects a woman's fundamental right to make her own reproductive health decisions. Nearly half a century later, Roe v. Wade is settled law. Yet, due to relentless Republican attacks in states across the country, it is hanging on by a thread, threatening to drag American women back to a dark, dangerous, and deadly past. These harmful attacks challenge our nation's bedrock values and significantly undermine women's health and economic security, particularly women of color and those in low-income communities. But with tireless voices and activism of women across the country, these Republican efforts must continue to fail." Close quote. I wonder how your heart responds to that harsh, heartbreaking statement. Is God looking for Nehemiahs today? Are we tender-hearted men and women who go to our knees when heartbreaking news comes to our ears? And if such news is heartbreaking to us, what do you think it does to the heart of Holy God as he watches abortion slaughter defenseless babies and he listens to this kind of defense? Here's a quiet, reflective song about the holiness of God that may help us pray today, my friends.